Access number 32389, Mr. Heath Hunter, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Hunter?
I was born in a village, a mining village called Merton, M-U-R-T-O-N, which is in Durham. I was born there in 1924.
And what was the date?
November the 21st, 1924.
And could you tell us something about your family background?
Well, my father was a miner at that time. He was a miner. Mother didn't work at all. I don't think anybody did in those days, the wives. Then, at a later age, I can't remember that. I left the village when I was four. And we then moved to a development in Durham, ICI Development, at Billingham, where I continued to live for the next 12 years.
Now, so what was your dad doing for a living?
He was a miner to begin with.
But then when he went to Billingham?
Then he went there and he was, well, a labourer, I suppose. Yes, he would be a labourer. They did give him a fancy title, I think, something, what did they call him? Machinist. That's right, he was a machinist. Actually, what he was doing, he was putting bags onto a machine and then they were filled and they were discharged. And he used to 80 times 20 bags on, and somebody else had then caught them, or a team of other people, and loaded them. It was before the days of bulk cement carrying, and they bagged everything, and it went on lorries or on railway.
Now, did you have any brothers and sisters?
None at all.
Now, so what was life like? I mean, you won't remember Merton much, but what was life like at Billingham?
I enjoyed my life. It was, it was a new town, a new village. And everybody in the road was, roughly the same age. So, when I was 10 or 11, I had about 20 people who had 10 and 11. And at different years, they all had their groupings. It wasn't like being born into an older place where you're only one child and nobody else. We had plenty of people. There was a swimming bath there, which I think was built in 1934. And I went there for years, because I enjoyed swimming. And
Was your dad's in steady employment? I mean,
yes,
my father
was never unemployed, but he never earned big money. I should think that, well, latterly in his life during the war years, he got better, but I would think he was earning a maximum of about £2 a week.
What was your house like?
The houses were built by ICI, and further down on the next village, they were built by Furness Shipbuilders, and so the two sort of merged. And they were quite nice houses. There was once a picture on television about them. About the houses. Somebody grew roses up there. In the middle, the minute the picture came on, I said, "That's Billingham," because they didn't use normal bricks. They made cement bricks. They had an excess of cement, so they made cement bricks, and then built the house just as normal. It was three up and two down. You had a sitting room, dining room, kitchen, and upstairs you had three bedrooms and a bathroom.
Loo's indoors then, and things?
The loo was downstairs, it wasn't upstairs, but the bathroom was upstairs.
So all mod cons for the time.
And we had everything, and I believe we had this in the village of Merton. I think my father actually bought a house in Merton, with about 350 quid. That's what they cost in there, and that was a brand new house. But I only have vague memories of that. But we had a house. And then when he moved 20 miles south, we suddenly had a company-provided house at 15 shillings a week. So that was 15 shillings out of his £2. So there wasn't much to live on.
Now, had he served, I should have asked before, did he serve in the Great War?
Yes, my father was. Yes, he was in the ASC in those days, now the RASC. And he went out and he was support at Gallipoli. He was taking mules ashore at Gallipoli. That was his worst war service. I think he spent a short time in Egypt after that. And then when he came back, he went back into mining. He didn't like mining, so he left it and got a...
Did he ever talk about his war service? Or had it made a big impact on him?
I don't think it did. He was obviously a young man. He probably was, 18 when he went in. He joined right at the beginning of the war. He had all his medals and... No, he didn't do anything brave, anything like that. He wasn't a hero. I think when he was on the ASC, he was a horse breaker mainly because he had a great interest in farming, which later on in his life he used to whenever he could, to go out and help a farmer. And he actually, on one occasion, he toyed with the idea of buying a very small farm. And I think my mother said, not likely. You do your work during the day. You haven't got time to come home and work on a farm.
Now, tell me about your education. You'd start that about five, would you, or six?
When I was five, I went to the local, it was a primary, infant, junior, and high school. It wasn't a higher education, it was just called that. And so I started when I was four or five, and then I went on to the infant school, and then I went to a grammar school in the next town when I was 11. That's right, I was 11.
Tell me about the grammar school. What subjects were you good at? What were you bad at? What did you like? What did you not like?
There was a lot of subjects. I didn't like Latin. I didn't like French. And I went through the whole of my life saying, I am not going to learn these subjects. And at the end of my time, I didn't. I just didn't pass the exams. But I enjoyed geography, history, science. And I did reasonably well at that. I finished it. I did get a school certificate when I was 16. At which time I suddenly had this urge to join the Air Force.
So at school, with the exception of languages, you were all right?
Oh, yeah. I passed on everything else but languages. Or languages and art, because I can't draw a straight line. But whenever the option at school, I could take either art or scripture. Well, I thought, scripture is something else I've got to remember, and I don't want to remember everything of something which I thought was, at that stage, I thought was useless. And so I opted for art. Well, I couldn't draw. I had no idea at all. They showed you these things. I remember the very first thing we had to do, they put you in a room in a circle and they put an attaché case with the lid open and you had to draw it. Oh, God, it was impossible. Some people got a nice easy view where they could just draw a straight line. I was at the angle where you had to have angle and depth and I couldn't do that. And so I failed on that. But that was the only things I failed on.
What about sport? Other things at school, things like sport.
Oh, I swam. I was quite a good swimmer. I swam for the house, shall I say, when I was in at school. I played cricket. Not well, but I could play cricket, put it that way.
Were you keen on sport, or was it just something you did?
I was like all kids. I thought it was the thing to do, but I don't say I was good at it. I mean, when I look back in later life, one of England's footballers about 30 years ago, he was in the next form to me, played with him regularly, a chap called Rickaby. Played for England 30 years ago. And I wasn't a good player. I could make the team, put it that way, but I would never excel at it.
Any other bit now, before the war, we'll come to the start of the war in a minute, but did you have any big hobbies outside of school?
I used to read a lot. I used to go to the library. I could read three or four books in a day. Books of my choice. I never read the books the school would say. I'd read the ones I fancied.
But you weren't a member of any boys' organisation?
No.
And just swimming and
Yeah.
Now, what about the approach of war? I mean, you'd be 14, 15.
I was still at school when the war started in 1939.
Now, it's the old joke, but do you remember the day war broke out? I mean, do you remember what happened at your home?
I remember it quite well. I was in the garden, and Dad said that Mr. Chamberlain is going to make an announcement. And I thought, well, who the hell is Chamberlain? And so I went in, and then we had this silly man, which I still think he was an idiot. He was the ex-mayor of Birmingham, wasn't he? I think he was, yeah. That's where he started his political career. And he came on and announced. And then immediately I remember the old sirens went. And we by that time, we'd had an Anderson shelter delivered. And we were going to put it between the two houses, which we didn't, because there were so many drains, we put it behind the house. And the old man said, into the shelter. And we all went in the shelter, but the old man didn't. He stood outside. So I thought, well, what's good for him is good for me. I can do the same in future. So that was the morning, September the 3rd, that's right.
What did you think about the war? You're 14, you're 4 years off being involved in it, really. I mean,
no, I was actually 16. I was born in 24, It's now 39.
September 39. 15.
I was 15, that's it.
The difference.
But I'm thinking ahead of myself now. Because a little bit of a story comes into the picture just after this. So the old man, you know, had us in the shelter and said, this is what you do if there's a raid. And we all said yes. And then we sat back and did nothing. Life went on as normal.
Now tell me about the Anderson shelter. There are still a few left, but a lot of people don't know what they look like.
They were corrugated iron arches. With a front and back plate, and there was a hole at the front in the middle section. The arch was the full length of the shelter, and at the back there was an emergency exit, which was another sheet of steel that dropped down, which you could take out from the inside. And there was no seating, all you had was this bare thing, and initially they had no base in there. I think my father put his own concrete base in it, and he put a little sump in the corner. Because I can remember, I had an air pistol at the time, and I used to float things on the water in this sump and shoot them from the doorway. I thought that was clever. Never sunk anything.
Did he ever put any bunks or chairs in there or a bench?
Well, he eventually put bunks in, yeah, so you could sleep in them. We never did sleep in them. We just went out when the alarm went. We went. Coming on to that, hands off. Later on, I think it was in June the 26th, I think, of 1940, the alarm went. And so this was middle of the night. So we dashed in the shelter. My father then went to another family he knew who didn't have a shelter and brought them all in, about 12 of them, crowded into this little shelter. And we hadn't been in there many seconds. There was a raid. And they were trying to bomb the factory, which obviously was it wasn't making shells, but it was probably making the gunpowder, whatever you call it, that goes in it.
One of the chemical factories. There's a lot of chemical factories. It was
ICI's main chemical factory. And we used to, when I worked there, because I've got out of step now, we used to buy for all the subsidiaries throughout the
country. I'll come back to that. So what happened on the 26th of June then?
On the 26th of June, the week before there'd been a raid, and they dropped bombs, and they'd bombed the ICI clubhouse, and burst a water main there. That was all repaired, and a week later, we believe it was the same pilot, came and he dropped his first bomb where his last bomb had stopped. So he hit the club again, burst the water main again. I think the third or fourth bomb landed just outside our house, just where we'd have had the shelter built, but we built it around the corner. But it didn't knock the house down. It raised a huge mound of earth, 20 feet high, and broke all the walls, all the plaster fell off the ceiling skin, but it didn't do any damage to furniture, and we weren't hurt. I think nobody ever said it, but I think there was an exploded bomb in this stick which seemed to just disappear. There was a space and you could see where they were dropping. Yeah. All the walls were, plaster was off all the walls, every room. And the end of the house, the wall was bowed. So that was the end. We couldn't live there. So the council found us a similar house about a half a mile away, which we went to. And I can remember going there with the furniture on a handcart. You remember the old carts with two wheels and a handle and a cross piece and wheeling backwards and forwards, and we got all the stuff moved out. But then you didn't have much in your house, did you? I don't think for a moment that we had a sitting room, a suite to sit on.
See, still in Billingham then?
We're still in Billingham. A little further away, half a mile maybe. And when we got there, we obviously settled in as best we could. Instead of being semi-detached, we were in a terrace then, with an arch between the two houses. And you saw part of your house was above the tunnel that went between them. But it didn't bother me much. And by this time, of course, I was working at ICI, and I used to drive out.
I thought you said you left school at 16.
I did.
You mean 15 then?
No, I wasn't 16, and I couldn't leave school until I was 16. So I did an extra term of doing nothing. Being in the sixth form and not been doing it.
So what job did you do? When you got?
I got a job with ICI, and they were, at that time I was interviewed, and I had no idea what I wanted. So they said, we've got a job in our supply division or our accounts division. What do you want? So I thought, I'll go for supply. I had no idea what it was. And so it was this place we were evacuated to the country. We were in a mansion in a place called Norton.
Where's Norton?
Norton, yeah.
Where is that?
About 2 miles from Billingham on the...
Oh, so not far. Yeah.
Not far. I used to cycle to work.
Now, tell me what work you did in the supply division.
I started off as a trainee buyer, buying whatever they told me to buy. And it wasn't a case of going to a shop. You went to the manufacturer and negotiated with them. And that was how I started. And that's and at the very end, when I was there 2 years later, I was involved in the supply of coal for the boiler houses. You know, hundreds of tons of coal sent in every day.
So tell me, how do they train you? How does it start? Because that's got chemical industry is really important to the war effort.
Yeah, but
how did you start?
I was a trainee buyer.
What does a trainee buyer do?
You just were sat beside some bloke and you have to do the job. You learned by experience. You were not taught anything. And nowadays you have all this method of, you've got colleges, haven't you, where they teach you. In fact, when I was working late in life, we used to have these people come to us.
But then, how did it work with this bloke sat next to you then?
Well, I just copied what he did.
And what did he do?
Got on the phone, talked to people, wrote letters. All these things I learned to do. Negotiated contracts.
And what were you buying?
Well, I bought everything. Initially, I just bought the odds and ends. But eventually, as I say, I was involved with doing the coal side, where we were negotiating with the various, of course, hundreds of colleagues in that area, negotiating with them to have delivered so many wagons of coal. Then that we used to take an analysis of the coal, and I got the job of working out the analysis of a peculiar instrument. You would call it, what would you call it nowadays? A computer, but it was a manual computer where you twiddle and then put little buttons up and turn knobs. And if you knew how to do it right, you'd multiply by 10 and take one off. But that was something which you learned by. And I got quite good at that. In fact, years later, when I went back there, the boss, who had been my mentor, he said, oh, I've got something to show you. And he produced my records, which I didn't know, but he always checked. And he thought I was good because my figures were always right. So it was one for me.
Did you enjoy working there?
Yes, I think I did. I enjoyed it. That's where I met my wife, so it must be good.
So when did you meet? You met her before you went in the RAF. So you're pretty young.
Well, I went in the Air Force when I was 17 and a half.
Were you? Was that a restricted, a reserved occupation? Sorry.
No. It wasn't reserved. Anybody could do it. It's a job. Anybody could do it. Just a bit of application, put it that way. If you applied yourself, you could do it.
Now, were you in any of the volunteer organisations, Home Guard or TA or anything at all, during those couple of years?
No, not until I joined the ATC.
Now, when did you join them?
When I was told to by the Air Force authorities. They said, go back to your local place and join it.
Right. Oh, well, we better do the RAF authorities first. So how did you come to want to join the RAF?
Well, I always wanted to fly. I like the idea. I couldn't afford to fly, and that was obvious. So I just hankered after it. And, of course, everybody wanted to be a fighter pilot. By the time I got in, they didn't want fighter pilots anymore.
And Where did you go to volunteer?
Middlesbrough.
And what happened to it? I mean, how old were you then?
17. As soon as I was 17 years and 3 months, I volunteered. And I went to Middlesbrough to the recruiting office there. And then they sent me to Padstow. in Lancashire.
This is all before you joined the ATC.
This is just as you were joining the Air Force.
But before you joined the ATC.
Yeah, I didn't. I joined the ATC after they told me to join.
Yeah. So you went. You went, and what did they? What sort of questions did they ask you at Middlesbrough? I mean, what were they looking for? Because they didn't take anyone for the.
Well, if you had a school certificate, you were in. I think.
It was education.
Education, basically, if you were reasonably, and your body was warm, they took you in.
And what about, so not much of a physical test?
No physical at all. At that stage, we had no, it was just a case of reporting in, signing the documents.
And this was when you were 17 and 3 months, it's what, February 43?
Around about February, March, yeah.
Now, so you were sent to Padstow. Padgate.
Padstow is where I used to go on holiday after that.
I'm confusing myself there.
Yeah, Padgate.
So, and that's the recruit reception centre.
Aircrew receiving centre, was it? Yes. ACRC.
And what happened when you got that? When would that be? That would be in...
About a week later, I should think.
So roughly March 43.
Yeah. And all they did there was give you a medical, take your blood pressure.
They check your eyes?
Oh, yeah. My eyes were all like that.
Things.
Yeah, well, yes, full medical. You didn't have to do anything other than that. And then you had an interview with a group captain and a couple of wing commanders.
Now, what do you remember of that interview?
Asking me questions I didn't know the answers to. That was the main thing. He said, and then when he finished, he said, well, I think you'd make a very good navigator. And I thought to myself, well, that's where we get lost. So officially, I joined the Air Force as a navigator.
Now, where they got that from? What did you say, do you think?
Well, I said everything wrong. When they said, quote Pythagoras, I said, what is Pythagoras? Let me think about it. I didn't give any answers like that. I mean, I could do maths, but I wasn't well up in it.
So you and think that it was more that they needed navigators and that you were...
I think they needed navigators.
What did you think of the idea? I mean, you wanted to fly.
I wanted to go in the Air Force, so that was it. Well, I just accepted it.
So you didn't have to fly, as far as you were concerned. You were happy enough with being a navigator.
Well, I was going to fly, wouldn't I? I'd be in the plane.
But you wouldn't be a pilot.
Well, that's it. I wouldn't be a pilot, but I'd be in the plane. Yeah. You know, so that.
Now, anything else happened at Padgate other than they told you to go back home then? Didn't they?
Told me to go home, and they would call me when they wanted me.
And they told you to join the
ATC.
Now, tell me about your training with the ATC. Which ATC did you join?
I joined the. I don't know what it was, the Stockton Grammar School ATC, and it was run by two of the masters who had already been known since I was 11, a chap called Tebbles and Golding were the two officers.
Because that was your old school, wasn't it?
Back to school. And when I got there, half of my form were in the ATC, all going to do the same thing.
Now, what uniform did they issue you with?
They gave you a uniform that looked exactly like an Air Force uniform, the same coloration. But it was buttoned up to the neck like a first-time private's uniform. So you came right up here. And they had silver buttons or chrome buttons on rather than brass buttons.
Now, so how did they start your training? Was it on a set night or afternoon? Or?
Oh, yeah, we went along, was it two nights a week to have lectures on flying, what do you call it? Well, you did. I remember doing Morse code there. Signalling.
Well, let's start with that. Tell me about the signal training and the Morse code. How did they actually go about training you?
Well, they had simply had a key. They told you what the letters were. You know, A was dedarred and so on. And you go, everything was a form of coding, wasn't it? You had each letter had a different thing. And if you got it right, mind you, you could make mistakes and send the wrong letter. Or if you didn't know the code at all, you couldn't receive it. But so you had to know these things, so we learned that. That was the first thing you learned.
How did you take to it? Because some people take to that quickly and some people have trouble with it. It's a musical
thing. I always had trouble with it when it came to doing it by light. I could never be sure of myself. But my feeling was in later life, why the hell do I have to know how to signal when I've got a bloody wireless operator? Who can do it very well.
So there's Morse code. What else did you learn?
What did they call it?
Aircraft recognition?
Oh, we did that, yeah.
Well, tell us about that while you're thinking.
Well, aircraft recognition, of course, was they had an epidioscope or a lamp, and they used to put it on the wall, and They speeded it up. They could show you these shots of various aircraft, British, American, German, and they'd have them coming at all sorts of angles, and you're supposed to be able to identify them. And then they got the stage where you only had a split second to do it, because that's all you would get. It would be a split second visual of them. It's just something I'll play with this instead.
Aircraft, anything else?
Theory of flight.
Tell me about that. How far did you go into the theory of the flight?
Well, you didn't go very far. You just got the basics. And, of course, it would all be repeated when you went into the Air Force. How did you get lift on the wing? Airflow over the wing and...
Simple science.
It was elementary science.
Did you do drill?
Yes, we did drill. And on one occasion, I remember vividly, we got... a chap who'd been at my school, when I was in the juniors, he was the sixth form, he was a prefect, and he by then was a sergeant in the commandos, so he came down and gave us an evening's drill, nearly wore everybody out. There was no question of sitting down, getting your breath back. He went from one section to another, jumping over bloody hurdles, marching up and down, I think he'd been in the Guards before he was a commander.
Did you see the as a young lad, so what, 17 and not much, did you see the point of drill at the time?
At the time, no.
Did you enjoy it or not like it?
Well, I just got ahead. You had no choice. If you turn up, the first thing you were going to do was a half an hour square bashing.
And you weren't. You didn't have any problems with coordination?
No, I don't know.
Any other training you remember with the ATC? Did you get a flight with it? There's quite a lot of airfields around there. Did you get it?
I flew on a couple of occasions. We went for a fortnight's camp at Thornaby Aerodrome.
Oh, well, tell us about that. Well, what happened at the camp?
We lived in a tent. My first experience of camping. It was good.
And it was summer camp, was it?
Yeah, in the summer it was. Well, I suppose after you'd been on rations for some time, you just suddenly got proper food. You were fed, you got the airman's mess, it was quite good. And then they had a sports day when we competed against all the other local ATC units, and which we won everything that we entered for, we won.
And what else were you doing? I mean, were you doing any military training or air training?
Yes, we had flights.
Tell us about the flight, because that would be your first flight.
It was the first time I'd ever been in an aeroplane.
What was it like? Do you remember the name? What sort of aeroplane
it was? It was an Anson.
So what was it? Avro Anson. What was that like?
Well, of course, until just before that, it had been a frontline bombing, I know that. But I suppose they had a couple of these aircraft on the stations. And I think they took us up two at a time. We were allowed to go up. And it was quite a novelty, because on the station there were mainly Hudsons, but these had these two old Ansons that used to take us up in. And the day I went up, there was obviously an alert on, and suddenly in the distance we could see puffs of smoke. And it was our bloody artillery shooting at a German plane, but they were nearer us than them. That was my first flight. Yeah, it was exciting, very exciting. But you see, you never got hold of the controls.
You enjoyed just the experience of it.
I'd have loved to have done it when I was younger, yes. I'd have liked to have gone with, who was the bloke who used to come around with his flying circus, do you remember? Not before your time.